Yeah.
So to start this podcast off, on the weekend, right, I was at this job. Uh-huh. And I was just doing the thing, you know, serving drinks, talking to women and all that. And it was towards
the end. Wait, serving drinks?
Serving drinks.
Off a platter or yourself?
Out of a bottle.
Out of a bottle, right?
Out of a bottle, okay, yes. Okay.
So different night.
Yeah,
different
night. It was a bit, it was chill. It was a great
different,
place.
Different than usual.
It was really cool. So we were up. I was up in somewhere in the Perth Hills, right? And they had like this big house.
Yeah, yeah.
And the women there, they're all, I would say they're all pretty high class because they were dressed up in like really expensive dresses and flaunting jewelry and all that. They were really nice. Like I was talking to doctors and paramedics and, you know, some school teachers. And
is this a crime scene?
No. No. But I was serving drinks and then I was talking to these, what is it, two girls and they were paramedics at the time. And then this one chick, and I would, because they would notice that I had a hearing loss. Right. So I was talking about what it was like growing up with a hearing loss.
Yeah, yeah.
And then out of nowhere, this chick who's absolutely canned just comes up behind me and just says to me, if you're born deaf, right, and you become schizophrenic, do you hear voices or see hands? Well, Jack, do you, what do you think?
That's the dumbest question ever.
Why? I think it's legit. Well,
no, even if you're deaf, you'll still have your own internal voice. Let's see. The hands are like the medium so that you, the mediums are the language so that you have the same information.
Yeah, but.
No, you would have the same thing in your head.
I know, but if you're born deaf, do you still have your own internal voice? Like, how do you know what that voice is going to be?
It's just not the same as your physical voice. You still, even when you think, you still see hands. What an idiot.
Yeah, maybe it's just some dude, and then out of nowhere, you just see a couple of gloves going.
Oh my god.
Well, welcome to this day's episode of the podcast.
That was so weird.
Well, I don't know. I was just in shock. I was like,
It's a stupid question.
I know, but you have to be. You can only be drunk to ask those questions. Yeah, I don't think sane mind wakes up in the middle of the night like, shit, I got an idea. Jack, do you hear voices or see your hands if you're deaf and schizophrenic?
Oh, God.
Okay. Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it. So let's watched the newest UFC Fight Night, Smith versus Rakic. Is it Rakic? I think it's Rakic. I didn't get to see the women's flyweight fight. Do you want to take it away? Because that was against that was Alexa Grasso versus, now I'm gonna butcher this South Korean name. Is it Ji
Yeon Kim? Kim. Yeah, okay. I think that's her name.
Take it away, Joe.
Well, Alexa Grasso, basically, she came up and it was her first fight in the women's flyweight division.
Mm-hmm.
She said she felt very, very comfortable. She only turned just, I think she just turned 25 a few weeks ago. And then, and she was saying on her post-fight interview that she skipped her birthday. She trained. She said she didn't want to, she held it off celebrations for her birthday because she wanted to be focused for the fight.
Fair enough.
And she basically was in training camp at the time. So she was trying to get her weight up to the appropriate weight. And here's the thing, she looked really, really comfortable in flyweight. And I think she was really slick. She has really, really good boxing. She was throwing really good combinations. You know, she was doing really well. She's won her last, she fought two times last year. She won to Carolina, I can't pronounce her last name.
I wouldn't even try.
Yeah, I wouldn't even try. But she lost to Carlo Esperanza, which, she's got a pretty good record. She's only got three losses at the moment. But coming back from this, she has a really like slick boxing style.
Yeah.
And she was really good at keeping her hands up. One of the things is that she was, I could tell that she was good at boxing because she was just, taking advantage of Jin Yeon Kim's mistakes.
Yeah.
Because she was dropping her hands a lot. And the moment she would drop that hand, bam, she hit, basic boxers move, wait for them to drop their hands, because and my fighters do drop their hands a lot.
I think a lot of the time, just because it's going for five rounds of 5 minutes of work, sometimes they prefer to be a bit more relaxed because it's 4 ounce gloves. Also, you notice with some of these strikers, they're quite dynamic in that, so it works well to like cut angles. And also, when when you have your guard up for a long period of time, you know, it does tax your shoulders, whereas, you know, you can relax a little bit in between shots by keeping them nice and low. Just so happens, if you don't have good head movement or good footwork, you are going to get, you know, jammed. You know, you get your nose jammed off. I didn't get to see the full fight. I got to see maybe the last round, where we're seeing a little bit more of like grappling up against the cage as well. Did you notice that as well in the last round?
Yeah, I want to see Grasso. Yeah, I did. I want to see Grasso basically move up, because Jin Yeon Kim. God.
She was number 14.
Yeah, she was number 14. So she'll probably end up taking her spot or go 15.
She was unranked beforehand, yeah?
Yes, unranked, correct. Sure. Because she'd moved up from strawweight. That's
right,
why.
Right.
And the fact that now she's in a new division and she seems a lot more comfortable, I can see her probably succeeding a little bit more in this division. Maybe a good next fight for her could be someone like Antonia Shevchenko.
Right.
Or because then you got a boxer against a world-class, like, kickboxer.
Yeah.
And then, or maybe a Montana De La Rosa or Alexis Davis, somewhere that's a little bit more comfortable
around there. Yeah, not quite in the top 10.
Yeah, not quite in the top 10, but, you know, her next fight should get a push towards near close to the top 10.
Yeah, maybe her third fight could be top 10 or something like that.
Other than that, she's definitely one to keep an eye on, because I just love she's learning and she looks a lot better from coming off her last fight. So I think she could be a new dark horse in the top 10, but who knows.
All right, so I want to get into... So this one wasn't really shown that much in like social media and things like that, but it was Robbie Lawler versus Neil Magny. Now, Robbie Lawler hasn't been as active as Neil Magny. Magny's been doing a lot of fights, actually. You know, he's beaten Carlos Condit and other fighters. And to be honest... This is nothing against Neil Magny, because I thought he was brilliant. He's got a nice, long, lanky frame that seems to be working, you know, welterweight and middleweight. But I expected Robbie Lawler to, you know, to win, actually.
Yeah,
you know, I expected more pressure from Robbie, but Magny did a really good job at, like, neutralizing that. And he literally just out-grappled him for three rounds.
He was very, very calm and calculated with his approach to Robbie Lawler. Here's the thing with Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler has been to war so many times.
So many five-round wars. The best one would be Rory McDonald.
That's right. I was going to say, if you could give me the top 10 fights I've ever watched ever...
Oh, it's got to be...
Robbie Lawler and...
Rory McDonald, the Red King.
Yeah. Them two, one and two, probably two of the best welterweight fights, period. Because the fact that those guys went to the end. And the reason Robbie won... both of those fights, but he definitely took a toll. It took some miles on him during those fights, and especially Roy McDonald. I think the first fight he lost due to physical exhaustion, and we will forever remember the Robbie Lawler versus Roy McDonald photo, them two just staring at each other at the end of the second round, both just
ready
bloody. Like, Robbie's lip is literally about to become, is in half. And then Roy McDonald's nose is literally just absolutely shattered. And every breath he takes, just a little bit of blood just spits out.
I know.
Legendary. And not even that, but Robbie Lawler has a highlight reel. He's got some serious knockouts. But here's the thing.
He's nicknamed Ruthless for a good reason.
Yeah, he fights back to back. Tough as fucking nails. But looking at him today, he just does not look anywhere close to the old Robbie Lawler he used to be.
This is his fourth loss in a row.
Yeah, he's taken some hits, man. Like, I remember when he fought Colby Covington made a mess of him. I think when Colby Covington fought him, it was like he broke a record for the most strikes ever thrown during a fight, or most strikes landed.
Colby does a very good job of like hitting at around 60-70%, but at such a high pace, because, you know, he runs with, you know, marathon runners and these triathlon like level cardio machines. So looking back at his loss, it's really sad, because I saw a lot of memes about saying, you know, being really sad that this is reacting to, like, this is his fourth loss now. So back in UFC 214, he beat Donald Cerrone by decision, but then he went on, this is his four fight losing streak against Javier Dos Santos. Ben Askren. Now, the Ben Askren one, I would say...
Yeah, that was a controversial day in the office, really. Would you agree?
It's called a technical submission by Bulldog's choke, but we know that he clearly wasn't out. However, it was a bad call from a good ref, but anyone in that situation, I think, would have done the exact same thing. He was supposed to... He apparently put his thumb up. It wasn't really that visible. Yeah. He looked like he was getting... He went limp. Yeah, limp. But it was... Yeah. But afterwards, Robbie said this was him trying to relax, not expend a lot of energy.
Yeah.
However, you've got to understand, the ref, if you almost act like you're out...
Yeah.
He wasn't purposely acting, but it certainly looked like he was out.
Yeah.
The ref is going to look after you. And then as soon as he did, you know, went, called it off, Ben Askren gets up, puts his arms up. You know, he immediately went up and he was like, he was pissed off at Herb, comes back 5 seconds later, cools down.
Yeah, he dealt with it really well.
He dealt with it so well and he just went, look, it's okay, shit happens, you're a hell of a ref. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Because
clearly Herb Dean was beating himself up about it. He was like, no.
He went on the Joe Rogan Experience afterwards as well. Yeah. He just explained why.
Yeah, he says, I don't understand. He goes, he's like panicking. He's like, I don't understand. Your hand went completely limp. That means I thought you were out.
Yeah.
Even Joe Rogan on the time when he was commentating the fight, he was like, oh, he's out. He's out. Oh, wait, no, he's not. You know what I mean? Like, everyone thought he was out, you know? So I understand where Herb Dean was coming from at the time. Yeah.
Coming back to the Colby fight, though, for 5 rounds, he was dominated. I don't think he ever won a round against Colby. And then coming back to today's fight against Neil Magny, I had him, he didn't win any rounds. I think it was, I think I had won the second round, was a 10-8 round. He got out-grappled, right? And when he did come into these exchanges, he was doing not too bad. I would have liked them to exchange a little bit longer. However, Magny's no slouch either. I think he definitely did really well, especially with his jabs. He's got such a long frame. Well, you know, when we were watching the fight, we were noticing he's got a really long frame, really long jab. And now, I really, truly, I've been talking to other podcasters as well today. Definitely a dominant win for Magny. He's now beaten ex-champion for the welterweight division. And also, I think, also ex-Strikeforce champion as well. He deserves a top 10 opponent next. Because he wants one again this year.
I believe he holds a record for the most...
One of the highest wins in welterweight.
Welterweight division. I think
just behind George St. Pierre.
George St. Pierre, correct. Yes. So he's he's still going. He's got a hell of a resume and he's got a lot of experience on his belt. So it's just... Who would you say is a good opponent for him next?
Oh, that's an interesting question, actually. Because I want him to, you know, I want a top 10 for him in the welterweight. So I feel like, interesting to see that Nate Diaz is number 12 in the welterweights. But I would think maybe a Marco Chiesa. Or I think Rafael dos Santos is already getting a fight coming up, maybe against Damian Maia or something like that.
Yeah, now here's the thing. He's lost, Neil Magny's lost to both Rafael dos Santos and Damian Maia. If those two fight, Magny should fight the loser because then you got 7th and 9th versus each other. And that way, Magny can fight the rematch.
I don't think he wants to wait that long. I think Rafael dos Santos, I think this is his last... Rafael dos Santos, I think he's retiring after his next fight.
Really?
He said I think it was likely that he was going to retire. I think he said himself. I'm thinking if he has lost to Rafael dos Santos, he should rematch with him. Maybe possibly as a last fight. Or against Marco Chiesa or Damian Maia.
Those are both really good fights to have. I mean, because, well, one, Michael Chiesa, he's very loved by the fans. He's got, you know, the dude's known in the UFC for having a bit of a streak of bad luck. But still, Michael Chiesa, you know, he is definitely a good fight to watch. Who was the last guy that he fought? Can you remember?
Who?
Michael Chiesa. Was it Melendez? It was DeSantos. DeSantos, yeah, he beat him. And then he beat Sanchez as well, and Condit. So he's on a three-fight win streak. So
he's cleaned up a few big names. You know, everybody knows Carlos Condit, Diego Sanchez, Rafael dos Anjos. So, and I bet on that fight, his last fight against, I think I bet on his last two fights, and I won money off that. Oh, by the way, actually, I want to say.
Yeah, okay, you hurt yourself.
Well, this is from the other day, and I just just picked it for a second. So, you know, with the Verdict MMA app, I only did one pick, and it was for the main event.
Yes.
Which is going to be Rakic versus Anthony Smith.
What was your thoughts on that main event?
It was very good. Now, I actually picked that he was going to win by decision.
Okay.
And I bet all my XP on it, and I got it. And I got, I think I got 5,700 XP.
Okay.
And I got, when you get in the top, I think it's the top 10% or the top 1% or something like that, they give you the gold belt. And I got, and I came in and I put it on Verdict MMA and they said congrats. But it was funny how I only picked one fight and I got in the top 1% just on, the betting with the XP on it itself. Getting carried away now, but Anthony Smith against Alexander Rakic.
Thoughts?
Very good. Very good. To be honest, I thought Anthony Smith looked a bit off today. I must say, though, Rakic is definitely a very tidy striker, as well as he did very well on the ground as well. And he threw a huge amount of strikes. A very high accuracy as well, but what I found was really impressive was, you know, how explosive he was with those leg kicks.
Oh, those leg kicks.
Smack off those, dude.
Bang, bang, bang. Yeah. I think it was in the first round.
It was the first round.
First round.
He literally kicked his leg out of him.
Yeah, and then it was going down, and he kicked his leg again, and then Smith was on the ground. He was trying to defend himself. And he's a big scary dude. He's like, I mean, he's 6'4", like heavyweight. The dude.
They're both 6'4", actually.
Yeah.
They're both 6'4".
The dude is shredded, and he's only 28. You know.
He's from
Austria.
He's from Austria, but he has Serbian parents, so he fights out of Serbia.
Yeah. So he's that way. You know, he's tough as nails.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
So
he's so explosive, and the quads on him, his arms as well. When he was next to Anthony Smith, you know, it looked like he, when he hydrated, he had a lot more on him. You know, he let's be real, he dominated Smith.
Oh, yeah.
For, I thought maybe there could be a KO if it had five rounds as the main event, but unfortunately it was only a three-round fight, so I said it has to go to a decision. The reason why is Rakic has a huge amount of power, especially with those leg kicks.
Mm-hmm.
Leg kicks and the high kicks, that the roundhouses he does, but Smith, he's very durable.
Yeah.
He showed that in that fight against Teixeira, where he's handing the ref his fucking teeth.
Well, it just shows that there was complete dominance of Rakic. I mean, if you look at the stats, like, Rakic threw 159 strikes. Robbie Lawler only threw 53. Of those,
you mean Anthony Smith?
Yeah, sorry, Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith. Of those strikes, Rakic had 57 significant strikes. Mm. Anthony Smith only had 21, and then, yeah, it just shows there's such a high difference between the two strikes. But if you look at the guy's records, Alexander Rakic, he's 28, he's had 13 wins and 2 losses, right? Mm-hmm. Anthony Smith has 33 wins and 16 losses, so Smith's been in the game for a long, long, for quite some time now. He's, you know, he had the time where he was upcoming in the light heavyweight division, and he went against John Jones, and John Jones.
Some of these strikers seem to be getting out wrestled.
Yeah.
It was weird to see from Rakic as well, because, you know, he defended like, I think, 2 takedowns or something like that. It was very impressive performance, very dominant win again. I just want to check where he is in the leaderboard, because Anthony Smith was number 5.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Glover Teixeira as number 4 above him, who he just previously lost to. So it's interesting to think about, because now there's a vacant title. Alexander Rakic was number 8. Now he's just taken out number 5, so I assume he's going to jump up to number 5 now.
Yes. So here's my theory. So We know that Dominic Reyes is fighting Blanchowicz for the vacant heavyweight title.
Teixeira is fighting Thiago Santos.
There you go. So what I think what will happen is Glover Teixeira, so Rakic will fight either the winner of Teixeira and Santos, right? And then he might fight the loser of Blanchowicz versus Reyes. Then he goes to shot for the title. But just, again, I don't want him to be pushed too early, but I feel like that's a more strategic way. Or what he could do is he could fight the sixth spot next, then the loser of Teixeira versus Blachowicz, and then the winner.
I think he just waits until the winner between Glover Teixeira and Thiago Santos fights him next one title shot.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, if he does win. Honestly, dude, he looked really impressive. He's huge. He's ripped as well, so he's obviously got his nutrition, his training on point. Dude looked very impressive, and the scariest thing I thought aside his striking was those leg kicks. Because Anthony Smith really uses very powerful leg kicks as well, but Rakic's leg kicks, they were like bang, yeah, bang. It's like a steel bat on your quad.
Yeah.
You know? If it wasn't the calf kicks that were doing so well, then when he took him down, he was then out grappling him and out wrestling him. He would just knee him in the back of his legs.
Sometimes that's all it takes, just to put him down, really, those calf kicks, those leg kicks, because
they're being used so much more now in the UFC. These calf kicks are huge now.
Yeah. Henry Cejudo was the one, he was talking about that in the podcast with Joe Rogan, how he absolutely loves to throw those calf kicks. Like, he likes to wind them up. Like,
especially as the shorter guy.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, he likes to wind it up. What I mean by that, he says he likes to treat it like it's a big soccer kick. Like, step down and then throw the kick itself, rather than just rotate the whole body. So it's good, it's effective, and, you know, clearly today we showed that it works.
Well, I also want to bring this up. Alexander, he debuted in September 2017. So it's been about 3 years, in 2 days, it'll be 3 years ago he debuted. Now, you know, he's done a really good job with that freestyle style that he has. I think this guy is going to be very big. I think he's going to be top three very soon.
Well,
I think so.
Yeah, I reckon he will. Just time, man. We see it this time and time again where the young guys, they get pushed too soon, you know, and I just don't want to see that. Like, everyone thought Johnny Walker was a massive hype train.
Yeah,
he's gone down. Remember, he had that fight with who was that fight?
He's number 11 now.
Yeah,
everyone was expecting him to be some insane hype train and come through, and he was the next thing to beat Jones. And I mean, Jones was obviously game, but you know,
didn't he fight, what's his name, Leon Edwards?
Corey Anderson,
that's right.
And he fucked him up in the first round.
Yeah, and then Corey Anderson was basically yelling at him and all that.
He apologized afterwards, but he didn't. I don't think he appreciated how long he's been in the UFC, and then he's already been counted out and said that this new guy is going to be the next new thing. And I think he's been waiting. He was waiting for that title shot for a long time.
Yeah.
Now he's not even in the UFC. Now he's at Bellator now.
Yeah, there you go. He sort of humbled him a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But I'm expecting Johnny Walker to make the climb again.
It's good. I mean, well, that's the thing with a lot of fighters now, that when they're not doing so well, they do go down to Bellator. Or go down to another organization, and there's nothing really particularly wrong with that, because now ourselves we're starting. Yeah, it's for a money thing. It's like when you see, what is it? It's like when you see a retired football player going over to America, basically, to get more money, like David Beckham. When he left Man United, or Real Madrid, went to LA Galaxy, and he got paid a shitload of money for it as well. And now he's basically set for the rest of his life just for playing those few seasons with them. And they loved him over there. And I think it's the same, because a lot of big fighters go down to Bellator. We've seen a lot of big names go to Bellator, and then they get a good pay out of it, you know. It's something else, or they go to those Japanese organizations.
Go to one championship and things like that. We saw that with Eddie Alvarez. We saw that with Demetrius Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real, he's the flyweight goat, in my opinion. So...
we got to look at some of those people over in ONE Championship because they do a very, very different system to the UFC.
Also, Sage Northcutt as well.
Yeah. Do you remember when that guy got fucked up?
He got fucked up quick.
Yeah.
I still follow him on social media. The dude's huge. He's ripped.
He's young.
He's young.
He's still got a future ahead of him.
I haven't seen him fight in such a long time.
Yeah, well, because he's
gone on.
Busted his orbital bones. Well,
it wasn't just that. He broke something stupid, like 8 or 10 facial bones.
There you go. So it was really a massive fuck up to the face. But here's the thing. Do you reckon it was a good idea for the UFC to drop him early? I feel like he was on a winning streak. And he still dropped.
Yeah. I don't know, because you never really know what's going on behind closed doors and things like that, but, you know, in his time in the UFC, he'd fought a number of times. You know, he claimed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So he'd won 6 of his fights in the UFC, being that he was on a 3-fight win streak after he lost to Mickey Gall. I didn't... The thing is, no shit, they went and put him against Cosmo Alexandre.
Yeah, he is a world kickboxing champion.
Multiple times. And the thing is, no shit. UFC does it all the time. When Ben Askren came, they threw everything at him. Yeah. They had Robbie Lawler, and then they're like, oh, Robbie Lawler's not enough. We'll throw Jorge Masvidal. You get knocked out in 5 seconds, let's beat him down one more time.
Yeah.
Let's put him against one of the greatest people, you know, to... submission artist out there, Damian Maia.
Yeah.
Then chuck him out of the UFC and show that the UFC is the best. Now ONE Championship is doing the exact same thing. You took Ben Askren. We're going to throw your boy, Sage Northcutt, you know, the pretty boy martial artist who's apparently so great that Dana White, you know, swooped in and took him into the UFC. We'll put him up against Cosmo Alexandre. And he killed him in 29 seconds.
Yeah. And that was a fucking vicious knockout.
It was one punch knockout.
It was horrible to watch.
Do you want to watch it again, actually? I want to see that again.
Dude.
He's a...
Well, the reason why everyone liked Sage Northcutt, because he came up so young. He was there's pictures of him when he was 18 years old. The guy shredded to the bone. He had a black belt in multiple karate disciplines. You know, he was like that karate boy. But it shows... Well, I remember someone was talking about it. His fighting style, it's a little bit outdated. You know what I mean?
To be honest, right now, when I've seen him fight, he seems like he is more of a freestyle fighter.
Yeah.
He's got good striking ability, and he's got lots of kicks. A lot of the time, he was using a lot of the front leg side kick, which is pretty good to keep people at bay. And he did that very well. He had decent wrestling. He seemed strong enough. I questioned his ground game, though, because we never really got to see that. Plus, he was submitted... by Mickey Gall, by Rene Kachok, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
They throw them against one of the fucking best in the ONE FC, which is Cosmo Alexandre.
Yeah,
the clip. Beast of a kickboxer.
We're looking at the clip now for the people who are listening.
So if you guys want to see this at home, you look up Cosmo Alexandre knocks out Sage Northcutt. This was at the ONE Championship fight.
Yep. So look, now he's... Oh, man. Whoa.
One shot. One on the back of the head, actually.
Play that again, shit.
They'll slow it down. Bing. Oh, and he goes down. It wasn't instant, though. He stumbles, he falls, smacks the canvas, gets hit again, tries to get up. Now, the dude, you know...
Oh, that was a nasty hook, too.
He got him on the way down. Actually, no, there was 2 punches. You got him on the way down. Wait. Bang.
Oof.
Good right cross.
And then
goes down. Bang. Oh God. And then when he goes on his way down, he does a short left hook. Bang.
Oh.
And then that's not good enough. He won the rest about him and he hits him in the back of the head. But
so he gets hit in the left side of the face, but when he hits the ground on his right side of the face. Bam. Oh, that's a nasty tumble. Look, his face looks... Look at that. His orbital bone's cracked or something.
It's already swelled up as well.
Half of his face looks like...
Imagine that. 29 seconds. You've trained for months. You know, you've got a 6, 8, 10 week fight camp.
Yeah.
And it goes off and... The thing is, can you blame them? can you blame them when the UFC does the exact same thing?
Yeah.
They throw the craziest people.
Well, let's just talk about Cosmo Alexander for a second, right? That guy, we haven't heard from him since that fight. He has not fought since that fight.
No.
He has won every single fight. He is 8-1. He's only he lost his first ever fight in Bellator. Mm-hmm. But then he's fought in Bellator 6 more times, won him, and then he fought again in he fought for Legacy and SF Superstar fight, and then he went to ONE Championship and he fought in the car called Enter the Dragon.
Well, sometimes he did some of the kickboxing stuff as well, like against Nicky Holtzkin,
yeah.
who's one of the best kickboxers there is in ONE Championship, and he lost by KO by uppercut. But you know, when it comes to his MMA record, you know, he did lose his debut, but you know, after that, following that, he's had 8 wins. So it was in May 2019, last year, where he KO'd Sage Northcutt. Now, understandably, ONE FC is in mainly either in the United States, Canada, China, or Singapore. Tends to have more of the Asian demographic there.
Yeah.
Now, they can't do that, unfortunately, because of coronavirus, and we're being robbed by some really good fights. I wanted to bring you to a different guy out of now he's not as well known, but you do know him probably from social media and things like that. Now he's at ONE Championship. Now he's had a bit of a rocky start in ONE FC. However, I think you'll recognize the guy. The man, I have him on Instagram and things like that. He's a very flexible guy, good boxer. Now,
never seen this guy before.
Right, I'll show you him.
Okay.
Now this is hopefully I say his name right. Alain Nunjalani.
Mm-hmm. Just explain what I'm watching to the people who are listening on the audio
version. So we're watching this knockout. So that was when he did he's a huge guy, honestly. And you would think with a guy that's so big. He's a very heavy, I think he's most likely African, but the man's huge, right? But he's very flexible, and he does use a lot of kicking in that. Now, he's very quick, he's very fast, he's obviously got a lot of fast twitch muscle fibers and things like that.
The fucking size of this guy's legs.
His back as well, dude. He's enormous. He's enormous, right? Doesn't exactly look like a fighter, but you'll see on his social media, and I'll show you this afterwards, very flexible, very dynamic.
Oh, Jesus.
Spinning hook kick. Bang.
Whoa.
So that's a 32-second knockout. Very quick. Look, he's ripped. He's huge. He's an older guy, but now he's a scary bloke, isn't he? Fuck. Very scary.
Huge. What is he, a heavyweight?
I believe he's
heavyweight, yeah. He says heavyweight down there.
Yes.
He has 11-7 knockout, 11-second knockout, scroll down, against former ONE Heavyweight Championship Hideki Sakine. God, sorry, it's hard to pronounce some of these names.
Sometimes it is. I'll bring you back to it in a second.
Okay.
Now he's had a bit of he's got very good highlight reels, but unfortunately, you know, he's 4-5 in the ONE FC, right? With his mixed martial art record. However, with ONE no contest as well. He lost his last fight and he won his fight behind by split decision. Now, he may not on paper be that good. I think I've seen in some fights because he's got that big heavy frame, he seems to gas out a little bit later in later rounds and that. But the man is, you know, it's a scary looking dude. The only reason I brought him up was, even though, you know, the UFC has this image that they're the best fighters ever and things like that, there are still plenty of people that don't follow the ONE FC that much.
Yeah, I feel like ONE FC's on the rise.
I think a lot of the fighters are underrated. Now, I brought up this guy because obviously, you know, he's not one of their greatest fighters there. However, the man's very impressive. I think, you know, a lot of the time these fighters in the ONE FC get counted out on. I'd love to see a cross promotion. I would expect it more to happen with ONE FC rather than Bellator. I feel like Dana White does not mix well with Bellator's Scott Coker. I don't think so. I don't think he does. A lot of the time when Scott Coker was saying, you know, we have the best light heavyweight division, and Dana was like, well, the reason why you think it's so good is because you have fighters we let go.
Yeah, here's the thing. The issue, well, one of the, I'm not sure this is an issue, but I don't feel like the UFC really does have any competition. Do you get what I mean?
I think the very top of Bellator and maybe ONE FC.
The UFC brand itself.
Oh, no.
I feel like the UFC brand itself is just too big, too overpowered, too much money. It will be a long, long time before anyone even comes close to being competition for the UFC.
I think so, unless they build a character that's similar to like a Conor McGregor or John Jones, or someone that has a bit of hype around them, has a bit more of a bigger dynamic personality that makes other people tune in, because I feel like a lot of casual fans mix up UFC with MMA. You train UFC when that's just an organization, right?
Bellator needs a character who's like got that personality, like you said, but they also need a big record to step it up. You know what I mean? They need someone who's almost cleared out a division.
Well, Bellator has Patricio Pitbull.
Yes,
and he is the lightweight champion, and he's been putting out a lot of stuff on Twitter, and I'll bring it up for you now, actually. Yeah. But he's been calling out, and he's been saying, you know, I'll bet you, Dana White, I'll beat your best fighters.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we talked about that. There'll never be a cross-promotional fight between the
I don't think never. I'm just saying the UFC doesn't want it.
Yeah.
They really don't want it unless...
Because they don't... If there's a superior and they got all the money, they're going to feel like, oh, we're bringing ourselves down to this low to have to fight for someone for your guys. And if UFC wins, they stay the same, pretty much. But if UFC loses, they lose a little bit of their credibility.
Yeah, it's just... there you go. Patricio was willing to bet Dana White's $1 million that he could defeat the UFC's current featherweight and lightweight champions.
Wait, you're telling me that he thinks he can beat Khabib?
He thinks that he can beat Khabib, and he thinks he can beat the current featherweight Alexander Volkanovski as well. And he also said, I'll remember those words after I knock you out. Put your money where your mouth is, Dana White. Let's go, Scott Coker, Bellator MMA. Oh, come on. Like, the thing is, you know, we love a lot of these Bellator fighters like Michael Chandler. We think, you know, Patricio is beating Michael Chandler, right?
Yes.
But Michael Chandler, I think, has, you know, improved a lot. I think it would be a really... It would be very important to the UFC to sign him on. And I think that Dana White actually said in a press conference that they're willing to do that, but... Patricio Pitbull, you know, he's definitely calling out particularly Alexander Volkanovski. You know, Volkanovski said, that's the easiest money you'll ever make, Dana White, let's make it happen.
Yeah, well, I feel like Volkanovski, looks like they're just throwing one to Volkanovski, and Volkanovski just like gets a better resume. But the thing is, he wants it because he knows he can beat him. But the thing is, Volkanovski, he's already got his hands full in the featherweight division because the featherweight division...
It does. It's already been put on a halt for a little bit. And I think they're just trying to, you know... there's one that I really want to... I saved it to my phone, actually, because I want to bring it up rather than my laptop that we usually use on the podcast, but...
Yeah, you bring that up, and then so you showed me one of your guys from ONE Championship, because there's one guy I want to bring up, basically, as well, who... He's very similar to the guy you just showed me.
Okay, well, you show me him first, because I wanted to talk about the Khabib vs. Gaethje card, because it is stacked. Because we were talking about the featherweight division, Zabit has been versus Rodriguez, because we know they've been cancelled again.
Yeah. Yes.
It's been put on the Khabib vs. Gaethje fight. On that say, and I'm not going to go into huge detail, because we can talk about that in a bit, because that's in October the 24th. We've got Makhachev versus Rafael dos Santos. We have Dos Anjos, Robert Whittaker versus Jared Cannonier, Dustin Poirier versus Tony Ferguson.
That one I'm looking forward to.
And then Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje.
Clear your calendar. Clear your calendar.
Don't go anywhere, guys. Don't go anywhere. UFC 254. That's right after Adesanya versus Costa, which is coming in, in weeks now. Like
2020, right, has been basically everyone's like, 2020 has been the worst year ever. Basically, Dana
White. Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje.
Yeah.
Amazing fight. Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. Amazing fight. Francis Ngannou versus Yozino Rosenstrike, amazing fight. I'm very proud of the UFC for putting on fights despite COVID, because even though 2020 has been a fucking shit show, yeah, right?
There is nothing that's stopping the UFC. Dana White said it a while back. He said, by 2020, it's on my UFC gym wall, I'll point it out to you, but he said, by 2020, UFC will be the biggest sport in the world, biggest organizations in the world. MMA will be one of the biggest sports of all time now. He has proved it because of the obstacles that he has gone through this year. Basically, 2020 basically has just said to him, you ain't going to survive this year, and then Dana White just went, hold my beer, fam, and just pulled out some of the greatest fight cards ever. There has never been a better time right now to be in a UFC fan or an MMA fan because of the star power they've got now. I don't think there's any other sport where we can just cap off names just like that.
I know.
It's a very saturated market. So you were saying?
I think you covered it pretty well.
Can you show
me this one FC thing? Okay.
So
a quick disclaimer: we do talk about the UFC and the Bellator mainly.
Yes.
Some of the one FC stuff gets on our radar sometimes. However, there's so much to cover already in the UFC and Bellator that sometimes the stuff in the more Asian circuit it doesn't catch our radar.
Yeah.
But
it should.
It's just the more one FC grows, the more we're going to talk about it more. It's just mainly we do talk about the UFC and Bellator, unfortunately.
It's not that. It's just the thing I love the most about this podcast is that there's always something to talk about.
There's always something to talk about, and because sometimes it's too much.
Yes, exactly. Because we literally do two podcasts a week, right?
Yeah.
We do the MMA. We usually do our MMA one every Sunday after the card.
Typically the day of the card, if not the day after.
There you go. And a lot happens over the space of the week. And we're just talking about one organization. There's multiple organizations. Like, we're about to talk about one right now that is not UFC. It's not Bellator. It's not one. It's called Titan.
Titan FC. There's PFL. There's
Cage Warriors. Cage Rage. There's
Cage Fighters.
Yeah.
There's too many. And then there's even the ones that are here, which is there's Elite FC. Oh no, Elite FC was a while ago. There's one in Australia, and they actually host fights where we're from, probably about 10 minutes from my house at the arena over there.
We should go there and commentate.
I want to go there. It's not cheap, but...
How much is it?
I can't remember. It'll be a lot cheaper than a UFC fight. If there's one thing I want to do with this podcast is us to actually go there and see a fight live. Oh, can I please talk about one thing?
Okay, you're going, go.
UFC 251, right? That was Jorge Masvidal versus Kamaru Usman. Do you know where that was originally going to be?
No.
Here.
Really?
Western Australia. It was going to be here.
Really? I knew that the Shevchenko fight was going to be here, but I didn't know that Kamaru Usman was going to be
here. It was going to be. UFC 251 was going to be here with Volkanovski fighting on the same.
That's right, yes.
Now, how bad is that we didn't even get the option to, even... Imagine if they came to the UFC gym and you and I are there, you're working, I'm there doing a podcast or something like that, all working out, and they walk in, and that, there's the UFC embedded. I really hope this COVID shit gets cleaned up, because when they start to have the Perth fights again, holy shit, where else are they going to come to train?
If they came to train and they stepped inside that octagon, I would clear my whole cat. I would clear my day just so I could sit in the corner and just listen to everything that was told.
No training today, boy.
Yeah. I'd clear that whole day. Say, sorry, guys. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I'll take this fucking chair. I'll go put it by the octagon. I'd turn off all outside noise and just listen to whatever the fuck goes on.
If they came to Perth, I would just like, all right, all my plans have... changed. Yeah. I'm going to the UFC gym right now. It'd be mobbed.
It'd be great.
It'd be mobbed.
Yeah, well.
At least I can go in and be like, sorry boys, actually train here, bye.
It'd be good. It'd be great for the gym too. Anyway,
I would make a last set podcast t-shirt and just walk in. Like, I haven't listened to the podcast.
I wouldn't mind that. Anyway, so what I'm about to show you right now for the people listening on the audio version, This is Kamaru Usman's heavyweight brother. His name's Muhammad Usman. He fights for Titan FC. And
he's a big boy.
He is thick.
I know they've talked about him on the Joe Rogan Experience because, you know, he's a athletic guy as well, but he just doesn't have as much experience as Kamaru Usman, obviously being the younger brother as well. I'm going to quickly watch this.
Yeah, but dude, the guy is huge. He is deaf. Like I said, he's definitely someone to watch out for. Like,
can you make a full screen?
Yeah, there you go.
In here to give us our fighter breakdown. How do you see this one? What's the key to Alexis?
There we go. So right, bam! Look at that flying knee. Jesus, mad hands. He's got a bit of a chin too. He seems to, you know.
So he's in the red.
Yeah, in the red. Shorts,
yeah.
Yeah. Look at that. Look, he needs to fix up his footwork a little bit. You can tell he's got that really wide stance. You know, and he's up again.
He looks very similar to Kamaru, you know, the big back and all that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the guy's crazy big. And then, I think if we could just skip
a little. He's going for the takedown. Are you going to skip forward a little bit?
Yeah. Boom. Look at that takedown. Massive takedown. And then they're just finished. So, basically, he skips this part. So, it spends a bit of time on the ground. So, one thing about him, he's like Kamaru Usman. He has that really heavy wrestling background. But then it's just one. Look at that. Those massive punches.
Insane.
Massive punches.
Insane ground to pound. All right, he's turned his back. He's given his back.
Yeah.
He tapped out.
Yeah.
He hit the canvas. He said, I've had enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit.
Oh, well, that guy was sitting on my back and he was plumbing me in the head. I'm like, no, tap out, because I'd rather tap out than
eat those shots. He didn't even attempt to even try. He gave up his back and then he just unloaded on him.
Yeah.
Shit.
Big, strong dude. Look, takes him to the cage, takes to the corner, picks him up off the corner, slams him.
It's just ground and pound and pressure from then until.
Very similar to Kamaru's stuff.
Until he physically tapped out on the canvas, he just went bang, bang, I don't want this anymore.
Yeah. So, so from where I see it is, you know, he could be a future star one day, but looking from that, he still has a long way to go because it was very stiff and it was like dropping his hands.
Technically as well. Yeah. Okay, so I want to move on to, I want to have a little preview for the card that's happening next week.
Oh.
Now, we know that headlining this is Alistair Overeem.
Yes.
Versus Augusto Sakai. Obviously, Overeem is very well known, especially coming back from the Pride days and all the prior organizations to the UFC. Lesser known is Augusto Sakai. Did you want to take it away? Now, because Alistair Overeem is 40 now. Now, he's fighting Augusto Sakai, who's, you know, 29. Definitely a big, you know, because Augusto Sakai is number 9 in the rankings. He formerly was out of Bellator, and now he's in the UFC now. He's looking to fight Alistair Overeem, and it's not an easy fight. I know that his last fight was against Ivanov, who he defeated by decision, but...
It's just Alistair Overeem. He's one of those fighters that, you know, who he fluctuates. You know, he's like either win one, lose one, or win two, lose two. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
He just is up, down. The guy's had like 46 wins in his career. He's had 18 losses. He's fought so many times, you know, but everyone just loves to see him fight, you know. But the thing is, I got to ask, how much can a man like that take, especially now that he's 40? Do you remember that time when he fought?
A lot of people have questioned his chin.
Yeah. You remember when he fought Rosenstrike? He fucking lost half his lip in that fight.
And he was beating Rosenstrike that entire fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the last bit of the round, boom. And half of, instead of one, there'd be two lips.
He's had so many K1 kickboxing fights.
So, and you can, for someone 40 that, you know, his... gone through quite a few wars, you can question his chin, right? I think a lot of people do question his chin.
Mm-hmm.
I want to come back to Augusto Sakai. Now, he was in Bellator, and he did well in Bellator. I think, you know, he had a draw that he lost to Czech Congo. But he then in 2018 came on Dana White's Contender Series. He won that. And then he's now been on a 4-fight win streak since then. His last fight was against Ivanov, who he beat by split decision on the Woodley vs. Burns card, which we loved, by the way. I would say his most notable win is probably against Marcin Tybura, as well as Andrei Arlovsky, who he beat by split decision as well. So this is a difficult fight for either man. Yeah. Because my reasoning is Augusto Sakai, he's coming up, he's number 9 in the rank. He's obviously got a lot of power. A lot of his wins are by KO. You know, he's on a 4-fight win streak. He's young, 29. He's entering his prime. Typically between 30 and 32 is your prime when it comes to a fighter. Alistair Overeem is now 40 now. He's gone through absolute wars. He's still got power. He's still got that physical strength that he has. A ton of experience, a lot more than Augusto Sakai. The only wild card is the chin.
Yeah.
Because Alistair Overeem was beating Rosenstrike, right?
You got to question that, you know. You got to question.
Then he lost.
Yeah. You got to question guys like Alistair Overeem. They've been fighting for so long. Then some fighters are known for their chins, right?
Mm.
But here's the thing: they sort of overestimate their time on their for their how long their for how long their chin is going to be that strong for.
Mm.
Because some fighters they say, "Oh yeah, I've got a held chin, so that means I can endure all this damage." But you know, it's like
the same
a tank.
Thing with Chuck Liddell.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
You know, Dana White would actually pay Chuck not to fight every year. He would pay him $400,000 not to fight.
Really?
Every... And then he eventually retired, then came back against Tito Ortiz for the third time.
I don't think he should have done that.
Should have never done that. Didn't look good. Then Tito beat him, and then he kind of acted like he didn't get knocked out the other two times. Tito's a dick. I can say it openly. I don't like Tito.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't... Someone like Chuck shouldn't have been fighting. Now, Overeem was in the UFC at a similar time as Chuck Liddell, and he's still continuing to fight. Now he's 40 years old. Chuck's been a lot of those fights prior to the UFC as well, and collected a lot of damage along the way.
Yeah,
he used to have a granite chin. You could hit with a crowbar, nothing would happen.
Yeah, there are literally fighters out there who have that granite chin, and then when it gets cracked, that's it, game over. It will never be the same again. Frankie Edgar almost has never been knocked out and knocked down until he met Brian Ortega. Chin gets cracked. Mark Hunt, probably one, he's endured so much damage.
Yeah,
his chin's been cracked.
I would make an excuse for Frankie because he was fighting Pedro Munhoz and he was taking a lot of damage and he was fine.
Mm-hmm.
He was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was expecting a severe weight cut, like going down to bantamweight, to affect it. Didn't.
No, he did well. So now that we're on the topic of Frankie Edgar, have you checked the rankings for the bantamweight? Since Frankie Edgar has beat number 5, he is now number 5. Everyone from 5 to 15 has gone down one.
Right. Rightfully so.
So basically, you got all the names below him. Jose Aldo. Frankie Edgar versus Jose Aldo. That would be a great fight.
Mm.
Then you got Jim Rivera, Rob Front, Dominic Cruz, Cody Stamman. You know, those guys are going to be like, fuck, this guy's just walked into the division. He's taken a spot. I'm gone down one. Sign me up. I want him next. You know what I mean?
A lot of people are going to come after Frankie. I feel like Frankie needs to avoid those fights and just fight someone in the top 5.
Yeah, because Frankie's slowly on his way out. Mm. He's slowly on his way out because he's been fighting for such a while, and we love the hell out of him. We will never forget his trilogy with Graham Maynard, probably one of the best trilogies of all time. You know, if I could give you a few trilogies, he'd definitely be one of the top 5.
Exactly.
Along with Stipe and Cormier, hell of a trilogy, you know. But it just questions, you know, how long has he got left? You know, maybe he could fight 1, 2. I mean, I would like to see him versus Jose Aldo. That would be good. Or maybe Frankie Edgar versus Cody Garbrandt. But the thing is, Cody Garbrandt's going down to fight for the light flyweight title, so.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I want to quickly just finish up with the Overeem versus Sakai bit. What do you think For someone as old and has collected so much damage as Overeem, do you think he beats Augusto Sakai? On the one side, huge amount of experience.
Yeah.
Excellent power, striking. The main thing I hold is experience. And experience in the cage, the amount of rounds that guy's done versus Sakai being young, you know, obviously very good striker, number nine, rising through the ranks quickly, being in Bellator and the UFC. 15-1 record. The wild card is Overeem's chin.
Yeah.
Do you think it will hold up?
I think if Overeem doesn't get him in the first round, he's in trouble. Because I feel like he can, when he walks into the fight, he can take a few shots, but he can't take them all. You get what I mean? Especially when you're fighting at heavyweight, dude. Those guys got mad punching power. And he's a young 29. He's young. He's 29. He's from Brazil. He hasn't lost for a while, so he's got a bit of momentum going. You know, his last fight was in 2017.
To be honest, do you know what?
It's hard. It's hard to say.
You know what? The thing is, I was not expecting him to knock out Walt Harris.
Yeah.
When we did watch him following his fight with Rosenstrike, because he was beating Rosenstrike and then he got hit. If this is going to be a 3-round fight, I would say he beats Sakai.
Okay.
I would say I think he beats Sakai because, I want to go through his last four fights. Against Pavlovich, won by KO. Against Alexei Oleinik, the boa constrictor, excellent submission artist.
Mm-hmm.
He's got power in his hands as well. He KO'd him. He then lost to Rosenstrike by punches. However, I'm not going to lie, he was winning that fight, and then in the fifth round, gets KO'd with 4 seconds left in the round. Right? Mm-hmm. Then he beats Walt Harris. I think if it's a 3-round fight, he beats him.
Okay.
I think he beats him. The level of experience and the power that guy has, even when he's not Uberim anymore, not taking any of that tainted horse meat. I think he beats him.
What they do is they could just spike Sir Uberim's water with basically a cocktail of what we call steroids.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, here, I'll say
Mexican supplements.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Overeem, just spray a little bit. Yeah. Just squirt a little bit of this in your mouth. He goes, that's a pretty weird taste of water.
Put a little bit in his monster can.
The next thing you know, his veins and traps start busting out. He
turns back into a Super Saiyan Overeem.
He basically turns.
I want to see Overeem again.
The rhino skin.
I want to see Overeem again. Okay. I want to see him back on the source.
Yeah.
I want to see 40-year-old Uberim back on the source.
On that TRT.
KOing bitches on TRT.
Yeah. Ooh, that was time, you know.
Actually, I want to leave with one last thing now.
Okay.
I know Conor McGregor hasn't been talked about that much. I know you brought up the trilogy. It was Gray Maynard versus Frankie Edgar. Now, that was a really, really good trilogy, right? Do you think if there was a third fight, Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor could be one of the biggest trilogies ever?
Yes, absolutely.
Dana said that Conor is confirmed to not fight this year. And the reason why I think he's confirmed not to fight is because there's no crowd.
Yeah.
Needs the crowd. Conor's the biggest moneymaker. Yeah. Like, I don't see it happening. And I agree with him.
Yeah.
Do you think we see that trilogy fight?
Next year, I reckon what will happen if this coronavirus thing slowly starts to die down, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon, but we still got a few months to go to the end of the year. We got four, where basically this is the last day of winter here. I think tomorrow is the first day of
spring.
First day of spring.
September.
So actually, no, it's on Tuesday. Pardon me, there's 31 days in August. Nice. So on Tuesday, it's the first day of spring. It's the first day of September. We got 3 months to the end of the year. 3 months is quite some time, you know. So we'll see what happens to coronavirus by the end of this year. And then if it starts to die off in America and they're allowed to let people back out and crowds, or maybe they find a state that wasn't much affected so people can go and watch. Okay, I see it happening. And then Dana White comes in. Okay, January, Diaz versus Connor.
How about Ireland, quite small, much easier to control coronavirus like that. Mm-hmm. If Ireland becomes a little bit similar to Australia, minus Melbourne, sorry, Melbourne.
No, not, we don't care about Melbourne.
We don't give a shit about Melbourne. Sorry, you're a lovely place, I'd love to live there, but you're fucking up Australia's COVID stuff.
Yeah.
If Ireland has, you know, because obviously you can't compare Ireland, like their state, to America's state in, with COVID and that, because there's a difference in population density. Why not have the trilogy next year in Ireland? Have it in Dublin. Have it in Dublin. It would go insane. You would sell it instantly, right? It sounds like it would work.
That'd be really good.
They're already doing the bubble stuff with like NBA and things like that. Which
they got a good arena over there.
They do have a good arena, but I would prefer... I think Dana White and the UFC would prefer to fill those seats at some point. I think next year, book a trilogy for Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz. Now, I know it won't help Conor move up through the rankings in welterweight or lightweight.
Yes.
But excellent way to finish the trilogy. I think Conor has always wanted to do it. Great tune-up fight. I think he's already doing some big triathlon thing. Not a triathlon. He's doing like a water bike challenge charity or something like that. That's a good thing for you to, you know, tune up for that fight.
I actually think the deal was almost done, because I remember when Conor put out a tweet towards Diaz saying, "You shut your taint and sign the contract already."
You can't really believe sometimes some of the stuff he says.
I know, but I thought, woof. Well, maybe what if it's that Dana White's like, "All right, you thought 2020 was big. Wait till you see the shit I got planned for you in 2021.
Yeah.
You know? And then I think January, Diaz versus McGregor. And then we'll be on the Last Set podcast to be like, we called it.
I want 2021, Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz 3. I want it. And have it in Dublin, Ireland. It would sell. It would do really well. Especially if COVID dies down. Especially with Dublin having, you know, a lower density and population than America. I don't know. Let's see. COVID is the wild card in this case. We've got brilliant fights next week that we'll be talking about next week. We might be doing an everyday hour later this week, which would be really cool as well. If you want us to talk about anything, please send it in. Did you want to finish up?
I think that's good. I mean, I'm pretty happy with that, guys. One thing we were just noticed for, if you're watching this on the YouTube platform, guys, please subscribe. You told me. Tell me what you told me earlier.
About 80 or 90% of our viewers are unsubscribed. Now, you know, we're a smaller channel. We've only got maybe 20 subscribers or something like that. Please subscribe. It's really important. You know, it's very important to us because we're really trying to put out a lot of content. Hopefully you see on our podcast and things like that, that we do try our best to put out as much content as we can. So if you can please subscribe, that would be really appreciated.
Good. All the best, guys. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you soon, okay?
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.